Okay. Ephesians chapter 5 is what we're looking at. I'm going to start in verse 22, and I'm going to read into chapter 6 into verse number 4. Ephesians 5, verse 22. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies, he that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hateth his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, we have taught from these verses multiple times here at Grace. I'm sure you've heard it. If you've been in other churches, heard teaching along this line. I know I've taught along this line other churches I've been a part of. Now, I'm going to try to go slightly a different direction than you may normally would think. Not really trying to give anything new, because there is nothing new under the sun. But I don't always want to say the exact same thing the exact same way. It gets a little boring. And so I'm going to try to challenge you maybe in some little different areas than we would normally think about from these verses. Let me begin with a dog illustration. You like dog illustrations? I'll give you a dog illustration. I would give you a cat illustration, but we know that all of God's people who are right with God hate cats. So, okay, not everyone. I'll give you a dog illustration. So my wife and I, not long ago, we were out taking the dogs for a walk. And as you know, she, my wife, has three dogs. I have a total number of zero dogs. But when we go for a walk, I end up there with two of the dogs in my hand. And she's walking one of them. Now, we're going down. We're in the Metro Parks. And so we're walking the dogs. And so I have a dog in a leash in this hand, a leash in this hand. She has a leash over in that hand. And it's a wide path. It's one of the wide paths in the Metro Parks. And there's plenty of room for all three dogs to, you know, to walk and to sniff and whatever, you know, all the dog things they do. But as we're walking, it's interesting. The dog who's on the far left always thinks he needs to be on the far right. Well, the dog in the far right thinks he needs to be on the far left. And the dog in the middle wants to check out the dog on the right while he's checking out also the dog on the left and then coming back to the middle. But the dog that was on the left and the right now wants to be back on the left. And the dog that was on the right and is on the left wants to go back to the right. And then they both, all three, want to be in the middle. And then they decided to mix up again. So it's a zigzag. And you know what happens? You have three dogs zigzagging. What happens to the leashes? They all, you know, get all crookedated. And so, you know, and you're doing one of these things and you know, like this. And you're walking and you're trying to keep them all straight. And they don't. It doesn't really work very well. So in the midst of this jaunt that my wife and I had with these dogs, I said to the three dogs, and they don't listen very well. They just like they don't even understand what I'm saying sometimes. And so as we're walking, I say to them, I said, would you guys just stay in your lane? Okay, you got a lane here, a lane here, a lane here. And they didn't. They just kept doing dog things. Now, I think about that illustration when I think about what we're going at tonight. Because often in our homes, what we need to learn is to stay in our lanes. And by that I mean that, and we can say it this way, we need to learn what hat we're supposed to be wearing in our home. Because that hat will change at different times. There's different hats to wear, and we need to figure out what lane should I be in, what hat should I should be wearing, or in other words, what responsibility do I need to be focused on. So each hat, is the way we're going to use it tonight, each hat represents, you could say, a different relationship, and that would be true, but really how we're going to use it represents a different responsibility inside of a relationship. So knowing which lane that you're supposed to be in, or know which hat you're supposed to be wearing, I think is very important to having a Christian home. It's not unusual inside of a home for a person to have different and competing responsibilities. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. said this. It's a very famous statement. It's a hard statement to live. He said, duties don't conflict. Because a lot of times this is what we feel like. Everything is just conflicted. Well, he said this, and I think it's a very true statement. Duties don't conflict. What happens is we become conflicted how we're supposed to do our duties. That's where the conflict is. What duty is the most important at this time? Because only really one of them is the most important, and that's the one I'm supposed to focus on. Now, there are times you probably feel like you've gotten it right. Sometimes you feel like you've gotten it wrong. I'm the same. I can think of times in my life when I think I got it right. I'll give you an example about that. When my kids were younger, when they were probably preteen, when they were still young teens, one or two of them came to me. I think two of them came to me at different times. So one said this at one time, one said it at another time. They were bothered. They said to me, "You don't treat us the way you treat people at the church." Now, I think they were looking for me to say, "Oh, okay, what do I need to do?" I'm not sure what they're looking for, but I think the answer they got, they weren't expecting. I said, "You're exactly right. No, what we're saying is you treat them different than us." "Right." No, what we're saying is you have a standard for them and a standard for us." "Correct." But why?" "Because I'm for you, I'm your dad. I'm not their dad. I treat you as my child. I don't treat them as my child." Now, there's a plus and a minus. One is they're going to get treated different. Usually, my expectations for my children are higher than my expectations for others because they're my children. Now, that's a good thing for me, maybe not so much for them. On the flip side is this, I would do things, now you may not like this part, but I would do things for my children I wouldn't do for anyone else. There are sacrifices I'd make for my children I wouldn't make for anyone else because they're my children. And so I understand I have a unique relationship. Now, when they were here in the church, I was their pastor, but I was also their dad. And often it was the dad hat that I wore more than the pastor hat as they lived at home. So I think there are times I got it right. There are times that I didn't always get it right. I got it, which would be the opposite, not right. I hate to say the word wrong. Okay, I got it wrong. This happened some years ago, too. My wife was going, something was going on that was bothering her. She wanted to talk to me. And she was telling me what this situation, this issue was. And I just was giving her just kind of a cut and dry, black and white, "Well, here's what the Bible says. Here's what you need to do." And she stopped me. She said, "Could you please quit being my pastor and be my husband?" Ouch. That hurt. But she was right. I was not wearing the right hat at that time. And so it's important that we understand what hat to wear at what time, because that helps us understand what responsibility we're supposed to be doing. Now, it's easier, overall it's easier, I think, to identify what relationship hat to wear. Okay, I can understand the relationship between husband, pastor. I mean, that's pretty unique in those two different ones. So it's easier to identify what relationship hat. We don't always get it right, but it's easier, I think, to get that right. But it's harder to know which responsibility hat to wear inside that relationship. See, it's easier to say, okay, do I treat her like my wife? Do I husband her or do I pastor her at the moment? Well, I need to husband her. But within the husband relationship, what responsibility? Now, that gets much more difficult. And the truth is, knowing which responsibility hat to wear requires godly wisdom. You know, when we talk about reading your Bible and praying, it's not just, we're not just going through, okay, I read my Bible, I mark it off, I prayed, I put an X in the calendar that day because I prayed that day. It's more than that. It's more than just going through a list of things you're praying about or checking off boxes. I'm not against Bible reading calendars. I'm not against prayer journals. All those things have a place. But we're looking for the Lord's help. You know, when you go to the Bible, there should be a prayer in our reading. Something like this: "Lord, teach me your word. Help me to understand what your word says. Help me understand what it means in my life." And when we're going through difficulties, we ought to go to the Lord and say, "Lord, here's my situation. I read your word. I'm not sure exactly what principle, but please give me wisdom. Help me understand, Lord, what I need to do in this situation." So you're going to need godly wisdom to know which specific relationship hat to wear. Now let's move a little bit more into the study. Now, we're going to look at this in different relationships. Tonight is the husband-wife relationship. That's the one, because it's biblical responsibilities one. So we're going to start with a husband-wife relationship, responsibilities within that marriage. So spouses have multiple responsibilities to each other within a marriage relationship. Let's go back to our text, chapter 5, look at verse 22. It says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord." Now, is that the only relationship a wife has? No. It's a big one, but it's not the only one. Look at verse 25. "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word." So is the only responsibility a husband have is to love his wife? No. He has others, but that's obviously a big one. So it is true that wives need to submit and husbands need to love. But how that looks in a daily relationship of a marriage, now watch this, is going to change based on the circumstances. Now let me rock your boat for a moment here. Do you know it says in verse 25, "Husbands, love your wives"? Do you know wives are also supposed to love their husbands? Well, you know, I don't got to love you because the Bible doesn't command me to love you. No, that's not what it's saying. It's not saying only the husband love the wife. And there's other places you can go to in the Bible which would teach us that the wife should be loving the husband. Now, that didn't rock your boat. This will. You know, even though the Bible says here, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, that there are other places in the Bible you can go to where the husbands at times should submit themselves to their wives. Yeah, there is. There are times when you ought to stop and listen to your wife because she has it right and you don't. It may be dealing with a kid. It may be dealing with a situation at home. It may be dealing with life. There are times when just because you're the husband doesn't mean you're always right. Sometimes you need to say, you know, you're right. I didn't see it that way, but now I see it that way, and I agree with you. So there are places, because it talks about submitting ourselves one to another. And so just because it says in verse 22, wives submit, in verse 25, husbands love, it doesn't mean that's the only responsibility a wife has or the only responsibility a husband has. There are other responsibilities in the home. And so we have to understand, and that, by the way, that's the same thing true as you think about our responsibility to the Lord. If you think about submission here in verse 22, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands and to the Lord. So we're supposed to submit ourselves unto the Lord, right? The answer is yes. It's not a trick question. We're supposed to submit ourselves unto the Lord, yes? Yes, we are. But how does that submission look different at different times in your life? Sometimes there is a certain area of submission. Maybe another time in life there's another area of submission. It's not a one and done. You didn't just one time submit yourself to the Lord and then you never have to do it again. It's an ongoing thing. The same thing is true even in a marriage, that there's an ongoing idea of submitting and such, even if you think about a wife submitting to the husband. And now go look at verse 25. "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." Now, this is, I'm going to say obvious, but it may not be obvious. This is not talking about just smooch, smooch, wink, wink. Okay? When it says husbands love your wives, it's not talking about just being ooey, gooey, you know, lovey, dovey, wishy, filly, all that good stuff. Okay? I shouldn't say anything. It's nothing negative, but it's more than that. It's not just saying that you always bring her roses and a box of chocolates for Valentine's. Okay? It says, "Love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church." And the responsibility of love changes in different situations. You know, when Christ loved us, he loved us differently at different times. He still loved us, but how the responsibility of that love was different. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, go with me to Matthew 16. Hold your place. Eventually, I think we'll come back to Ephesians 5, but Matthew 16. Because the responsibility is for us to love the way we're supposed to love in that situation, not necessarily how they want to be loved. You didn't respond. This statement should kind of rattle your cage. Our responsibility is not to love our wives the way our wives want to be loved. Our responsibility is to love them the way that we're supposed to love them in that situation. Matthew 16. Look with me in verse 21. From that time forth began Jesus to show his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. That's talking about his crucifixion. Is that a sign of God's love? Him being crucified, is that a sign of his love? For God, what? So loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. So his crucifixion is clearly an example of his love, is it not? So here is this loving God who gives himself for us, and even on the cross he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He says that about people who just nailed him to the cross. He said it out of love. Let's go back to Matthew 16. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. Now this is a man, Jesus, who's going to say, not long from this, Father, forgive them. Notice what he says to Peter in verse 23. But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan. Whoa! Does that sound like a guy of love? That sounds like a guy who's got some issues here. But he still says it in love. How do I know? Because he's God. And God is love. So he's still speaking in love. And even in love, he gives him a harsh rebuke. So in one place you have a love that is very forgiving, and another place you have a love that's rebuking. Is it love both times? Yes. But what is the responsibility? I gotta love, sometimes I gotta love and be forgiving. I gotta love, and sometimes I gotta love and be rebuking, because the responsibility, even within that relationship, changes. So, as we think about these biblical responsibilities, inside of a relationship, not one relationship to another, but inside one relationship, we have to understand what is my responsibility that is in that relationship at that time. Now, which one it is at which time is going to take some godly wisdom. I'm going to share with you, though, four big responsibilities that spouses have to each other. Now, how you choose which responsibility at what time is going to be between you and your spouse and God, but I'm going to give you the four that should be in your home. These responsibilities should be happening in some manner within your home. Are you ready? You haven't filled out any blanks yet, have you? Not yet. Here we go. Number one. And each of your blanks sound very similar, don't they? Spouses are to be. Except this one has two blanks. Number one is this. Spouses are to be fellow Christians. Not just that both are to be saved, but they should be treating people in a Christ-like manner, treating each other in a Christ-like manner. Go with me to 1 Peter chapter 3. Now, I'm going to tell you, I think this can be a big problem in our Christian homes. You know, what's the old statement about familiarity breeds contempt? Sometimes that happens in our Christian home. 1 Peter chapter 3, look at verse 1. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation, behavior of the wives. While they hold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and wearing of gold or putting on apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart. It's always, God always deals with the heart, the inside person. Now, eventually it comes out, but it's the inside where it starts. And that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which in the sight of God, is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection to their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. Now watch all that to give you this phrase here. And as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Heirs together of the grace of life. He's saying is, understand that your spouse is a fellow believer, is a fellow Christian, and that's how you need to learn to treat them. Now, there's other responsibilities, but we have a responsibility inside of a Christian home to be treating each other as we treat Christians. So if it is a Christian home, then it is a home that has Christians living in it. That's how we started the Bible study. Remember a couple of weeks ago? What's a Christian home? A home where Christians are. Not just believers, but Christians. So if we have a Christian home and there are Christians in this home, then we ought to be treating each other like Christians. Therefore, whatever responsibility we have to a fellow Christian is also a responsibility we have to those who live in our home with us. However I should treat a fellow Christian, I also should understand that's how I'm supposed to be treating my spouse, because my spouse is a fellow Christian. Ready? We should treat our spouses no worse, now hopefully a whole lot better, but no worse than we would treat a fellow Christian at church. If I wouldn't come to church and treat someone that way, why would I treat my spouse that way? I shouldn't. What do I mean by that? Now, here's what I mean by that. Okay, I'm not going to extremes like, well, you kiss your wife, but you don't kiss people at church. Okay, don't go to weird extremes with me, okay? I'm talking about generally behavior towards people. And by that, I mean this. Whatever kindnesses, courtesies, or good manners we show at church should also be shown at home. You know, if I'm at the front door and I see a lady in our church, she's carrying something in, I feel like I'm a guy, should be a gentleman, I should go out there and see if I can help her carry it in. That would be a gentleman thing to do, wouldn't it? And here she is struggling to get in the church, and I'm like, hurry up, I'll hold the door open for you, hurry! Or I could say, hey, let me go out there and help her and carry it. That would be a gentleman thing to do. Should I not treat my wife the same as I'm at home? I try. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it. You don't need to chip in. This is a one-sided statement. I got to learn to cover. I'm going to cover myself already to start with. But typically, I'm not perfect at it. I'm sure my wife, if you go to her, she can give you a whole list. She has in her purse a whole list. And she would show it to you. Okay, but there are times where, like, if I'm downstairs, we have basement, we have first floor, we have second floor, and we have a full attic, a complete attic. So if I'm down in the basement, and most of the bedrooms are on the second floor, and she has and that's where the washing machine and the dryer is, and it's got all the clothes, it's folded, it's ready to go up, and I'm down in the basement, I see it, I try to, and I'm sure there's many times I don't, but I try to say, you know what? Why don't I pick this up and carry it all the, couple flights of stairs and put it where it needs to go? At least usually it goes on our bed or wherever this basket of clothes is supposed to go. Because now it's not super heavy, but it's a kindness, is it not? And so we should be showing kindnesses to our spouses like we would show kindnesses to our fellow believers. So just like God expects me to show care and concern for fellow believers outside of my home, He also expects me to show care and concern for fellow believers inside my home. So let me put it this way. If it is wrong to treat a fellow believer in a certain way, then most likely it is wrong to treat my spouse that way as well. So I need to treat my wife, and she needs to treat me. We're married here. We're fellow spouses. So we need to treat each other as fellow Christians. We ought to be Christians in our home towards each other. That's number one. So if I were to stop and just give you a little ad lib on the side, I think that would help a lot of homes if we just showed those type of considerations. I think a lot of times we just get too familiar with people. And, I'll tell you I have feet of clay. I really don't want to take my shoes off and prove it. I don't want to tell you all of my shortcomings. Okay, I grew up in West Virginia. I have a certain hillbilly way of thinking about things. My wife didn't. She sometimes looks at me like, what are you, some stupid hillbilly? And I'm always like, yeah, I told you when we got married, I'm a stupid hillbilly. And so I understand that, and that creates certain different ways of doing things. But I try, and she does. She does a much better job than me, trying to be thoughtful, show consideration, show kindnesses, things like that. And that helps. That's like the oil in the machinery. It helps the family, the home work much better when there's kindness is shown. So we spouses ought to be fellow Christians. Number two, and I think I can do this with propriety and appropriateness, but number two is this, spouses are to be lovers. Go with me to 1 Corinthians 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Look with me in verse 1. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 1. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote in me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. And he's primarily saying, you know, the best way to live is to live as a single person. Because you can, and Paul was very, very practical about this. The best way to serve God is not to be married. Because if you're married, now you have somewhat of a divided loyalty. No matter how much you try, you still got a wife, and then you're going to end up with kids and such. So he said, the best thing is don't get married. But the problem with that is it creates some other issues, which is verse number 2. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. Something of the intimate life between them. And likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Then he makes this statement in verse 5, defraud ye not one the other, except, so here's the exception, it be with consent, they both are in agreement now, for time, you know, we know how long it's going to be, we're both in agreement, that you may give yourselves a fasting and prayer. The only exception is it because it becomes of some religious duty that is keeping it from happening. And come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. So the intimate relationship between a husband and wife is biblical, essential, and mandatory. God commands it. It has been said, and I want you, I didn't come up with this. I heard this from someone. I think this is a great rule of thumb here. It has been said that the health of a marriage can be determined by how many times spouses apologize and how many times they're intimate. I think that's a great rule of thumb. It is wrong to allow work schedule, child-rearing, financial stress, or physical weariness to preclude spouses being intimate. Because what that means is you're not prioritizing that responsibility as you should. There's an old saying that goes like this. Make time and make effort to make whoopee. It's a good, I think, another good rule of thumb. Now, let me give you one more way, and then we're going to move on to number 3. To refuse intimacy because of an argument with your spouse is the same as robbing a bank because of an argument with the teller. How do I know that? Because it says, defraud ye not one the other. Don't cheat each other. So you get mad at the bank and say, well, okay, I don't like what you said to me, so I'm going to take all your money. I don't think that would go over too well. But that's what happens when we're defrauding each other because we're arguing about stuff. So let me just say one little statement about this and move on. I sincerely hope we're not letting TV and movies teach us how to have marriages. Because what they're doing on TV and the movies is not right. They're arguments and, well, you know, you just sleep on that couch and she throws the blankets out the door. Okay, that's not how Christians are supposed to be living. Okay, that, unfortunately, I think we let TV and the movies become the way we have our marriages. I know you know this. I'm being sarcastic on purpose. Okay, a TV show is this. Some guy writes a bunch of lines. One person reads their lines. The other person reads their lines. They act certain ways. They have cut, go, cut, action, lights, all those things. They get it timed just right. At the end of the scripted time, they all go their separate ways. It means nothing. They're just pretending. It doesn't work in real life. In real life, things you say continues over and continues on and continues on. When you watch some TV show and a spouse will say something very hurtful to their spouse, but the next episode of that show, it's never brought up again because it's not in that script. Can I tell you this? It will be in your spouse's heart. It will be the next episode they'll be thinking about it the next day. So we need to make sure that we continue to have this intimate life the Lord expects us to have between us. Number 3. Now, we're in 1 Peter. I should have told you to hold your place because I'm going right back to 1 Peter again. 1 Peter chapter 3. I'll give you the third responsibility. So in this relationship, spousal relationship, we're to be Christians with each other. We're supposed to have this We're supposed to have this the intimate life between ourselves. And then it brings us back to 1 Peter chapter 3. Look at verse 7. We read this verse. I want to go back to it because I want to see another part of it. The first part in that previous point, point one, we said is being heirs together of the grace of life. But let's go back to verse 7. Likewise, your husbands, it says this, dwell with them, them being the wives, according to knowledge. Now, what does that mean? Well, I think, first of all, it means knowledge of the Word of God. What does the Bible want? But it also means this. I think it means knowledge of how you're supposed to be in your marriage. And thirdly, I mean this, and I think this is very important, the knowledge you have about your wife. Did you know your wife is not like every other wife? She's unique, just like you are. You can't always treat your wife like someone else treats their wife because their wife is different than your wife. Some wives have thicker skin. Some have very thin skin. Some like the overboard, romantic, gushy, bring their flowers. Some could care less. You need to know your wife, and you need to dwell with your wife according to knowledge. Now, go with me to Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31. That's why the statement's like, well, you know, I told my friend so-and-so, and they thought I did exactly right. Well, you know, first of all, don't be telling your friends about your marriage problems. That's usually never a good idea. And number two, your friend doesn't live with your wife. You do, and you're supposed to have knowledge about your wife and about dealing with your wife. People say silly stuff like, well, you know, if that was my wife, I would blah, 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 blah. But it's not your wife. It's their wife, and you need, and each husband needs to dwell with their wife according to knowledge, and each wife needs to dwell with their husband according to knowledge. Proverbs 31, look with me in verse 10. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so he shall have no need of spoil. Now look at verse 12. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. The same idea that she's dwelling with him according to knowledge and trying to do him good, trying to do good by him. So what is our third responsibility in our spousal relationship? Number three is this, spouses are to be friends. We got to learn how to get along with each other. This is beyond just being Christian. Being Christian is the courtesies and the kindnesses. Friends is someone you actually want to be with. More of the palsy, wowsy, you like to spend time with them. So by friends, I mean someone you want to be around and you want to do things with. You enjoy each other's company. You know, it's great to love each other, but it's also important that you like each other. Because if you don't like each other, you can say, well, you know, I love them, but I just hate to be around them. That doesn't speak well of your marriage. Okay? We need to be friends. We need to be able to be together, enjoying being together, because we're dwelling according to knowledge. Okay, your wife or your husband is not like maybe some other friend you have. It's your wife or it's your husband, and you're dwelling with them according to knowledge. Most marriages occur because two people start spending a lot of time together and decided they want to do this for the rest of their lives. It's like, because I told Chloe I was going to use her somehow in the illustration, so now I'm going to. So it's like Chloe and Joe. They just got married. But you notice it wasn't, okay, I'm going to go on a limb here. I don't think anyone in our church was surprised when they said, hey, we're going to get married. I don't think they said, like, what? We didn't know you knew each other. No, we kind of knew they were spending a lot of time together. It kind of looked the direction they were going. And that's how most marriages happen. Two people start spending time together. Now, could you imagine this? Two people start spending time together and they realize they just really hate each other. I just hate being around you. Okay, let's get married. Okay. Be like, well, that doesn't seem like the answer to that problem. And so they start spending time together. They decide, hey, we like being around each other. And then they decide to be married. Let's do this on a long-term basis now. Now, what happens the other way? Many marriages fail because they stop spending time together. And then they lost that excitement of being together. There's an old statement, you stay successful the way you got successful. Now, what does this mean on a practical way? Well, let me irritate you twice here. Here's the first irritation. Ready? Spouses need time together away from the children so they can enjoy each other's company. One mistake couples make is they do nothing apart from the children. But they're my children. I know. But one day your children are all going to grow up and they're all going to move out. And you're going to look over and say, who's that person? Oh, that's right. We got married about 20 years ago. I haven't talked to you in a while. We still need to have a relationship with our spouse apart from our children. We should be able to be together without children involved. The children are not a part of this. That we can be one-on-one, sit around, talk, eat popcorn, whatever, take a walk in the woods. We can enjoy the company of each other in a friendly, palsy way, because that relationship needs to be built apart from the children. Because eventually the children are going to leave home, and then what? Then you still need to have a relationship. You can't all of a sudden realize, I really don't have anything in common. The kids are gone, and that's the only thing that kept us together. Well, I'm glad you stayed together for the kids, but you should have been building relationship as you stayed together for the kids. Now, if that did not do something, maybe this one will. So, I think couples, husband and wife, needs time apart from children, apart from their friends, apart. You need to date your spouse, one-on-one, away from people. Just if you do nothing but hold hands, make googly eyes each other, and walk through the mall. Okay, you need to be one-on-one time when it's just there's no kids, there's no friends, there's no church people. It's just time for you to tell stupid jokes to each other. Whatever you do that you like to do together, palsy, wowsy, friendly. My wife and I sometimes take walks through the metro parks. That's kind of fun. We walk her dogs together at times. It's not as much fun, but it puts us together at times. It gives us something to talk about, how much she loves her dogs. And well, that's not much to talk about when that conversation comes up. So anyways, spouses need time together. Now, watch this. Let me push you a little bit more. In addition, each spouse should have time away from each other to keep the freshness in their relationship. Probably the reverse of this is that we start smothering each other. That there's never any fresh air coming into the relationship. Now, I'm absolutely not talking about, okay, girls' night out, let's go to the club. Okay, I'm absolutely not talking about that kind of nonsense. That is sinful and wicked. Okay, I'm not talking about doing worldly stuff. But it is good when that there is some time apart where the wife can kind of just enjoy maybe whatever her thing is that she likes to do. Maybe she likes to paint. Maybe she likes to sew. Whatever. Whatever she likes to do. Maybe she likes to, I don't know, play the violin. Whatever. But she gets to do some things on her own, and the husband gets to do his things because he likes to, take little pieces of freedom and point them at certain paper targets and make little holes in them. And he does his thing. But then, now we're apart. When we come back together, we have something to talk about. Hey, look at this. I got holes in paper. Wow. And she's like, listen to this. I can play this tune now. I'm not saying that has anything with reality, but it could. Time together and time apart are both essential in the friendship part of marriage. Okay, and I'm talking about this responsibility of being friends. Time together and time apart, essential in the friendship part of marriage. Let me give you one more responsibility. Let's go back to Ephesians. I know I told you we'd get to it, back to it eventually. Back to Ephesians 6, where we started. Ephesians 6. And look with me in verse 1. So we're talking about responsibilities between spouses. We need to be Christian towards each other, have the intimate part of it. We need to be friends. But then there's a fourth. And that brings us to Ephesians 6, look at verse 1. I don't think this is a conclusive list, but I think it's the four big ones that we ought to be considering. Verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. You know what strikes me about this? is that for the children to obey the parents must be of the same mind, the same voice. Because how are you going to obey the parents if the parents, one parent is saying one thing and another parent is saying another? So that brings us to number four. Spouses are to be partners. I'm talking about working together. That's when I say partners, I'm talking about you're in it together, working together of and unified in agreement. That's what I mean by partners. I'm not talking about the friendship anymore. This is working together as partners. So what is presupposed in children obeying their parents is that the parents agree in what they're telling the children. How else can they obey the parents if the parents aren't in agreement? Because if the parents are saying two different things, they can't obey their parents. They got to pick and choose. They're going to obey one and disobey the other. So the only way a child can obey both parents is if both parents are in agreement with what they're telling the child. So spouses should be in agreement in the direction and functioning of the home. We need to be partners in this. A united front. Any organization that lacks unity and agreement is going to struggle to succeed. There are going to be times when you disagree, but that disagreement should be worked out between the husband and wife separately, apart from anyone else. Children. The children don't need to know about the disagreements. They figure it out. They figure out this is the agreement. Now we go together, and this is how the family works. Okay, spouses are to be partners. So let me give you one more statement about this, and we'll get ready for a conclusion. Never criticize your spouse in front of your children. Never. Never. But, no, never. But what if my... No, never. Whatever you got to say, say it to them. If you got to bite your tongue, you bite your tongue and you say it to them separately. It's never going to come out well. Well, all my kids will respect me more. No, they won't. They're going to see. Let me tell you what. Kids are so smart. They're just like us when we were kids. They see the split, and they know exactly how now to drive that split apart to get what they want. Okay? You never criticize your spouse in front of your children, nor let your children criticize your spouse in front of you. Back in my days at Long John Silver's, you missed your cue. They're all just teenagers, but when I worked with them, they would trying to manipulate me. They would come to me. We had another assistant named John, and John was he was a lousy manager, hands down lousy manager. They would come to me and they would try to tell me how lousy John was as a manager, and I would always say this: why are you telling me that? Why don't you go tell John what you think? This is my shift. I'm running my shift. I don't care what John does on his shift. This is my shift. If you got something to say to John, go say it to John. Don't tell me about it. Now, that's not how I would deal with kids. I'd be much more upset with my kids if they were criticizing my wife. But somehow we think when we hear criticism about the other leader, somehow that in our pride puffs us up. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is it's tearing you down. Because if your children come to the dad disrespecting the mom, that's a disrespect to the dad. And the same thing, if they're showing disrespect to the dad, to the mom, they're actually disrespecting the mom as well. And so we should never let that happen. Nor let your children criticize your spouse in front of you. There should be a united front. We're in this together. We're partners. And we do this thing together. So two last statements in conclusion. Which responsibility takes precedence in different situations is a function of godly wisdom. I cannot tell you. I don't live in your home. I'm not married to your spouse. I cannot tell you what responsibility in this situation, I don't know. But God knows. And so you get with him and you pray and you say, Lord, help me, give me wisdom about this. Now, regardless of which responsibility takes precedent, I can tell you this. All four responsibilities are a part of every marriage and must therefore be considered by each spouse. At some point in time, all four of these are going to be playing a role. These are biblical responsibilities that we have one to another as spouses. All right. Well, let's pray and ask the Lord's blessing. Father, we would ask that you